This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you, bright and early on this Saturday morning. A happy Passover, a happy Easter. If there's something else you're celebrating this weekend, happy that to you as well. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. 2 p.m. this afternoon, the Jets and the Canucks, game number 77. On the Winnipeg Jets schedule as we enter into the final week. Pardon me, game number 78, as we enter into the final week of the 2014-15 regular season in the NHL. Gentlemen, I say good morning to you both. Nice to see you both bright and early on this Saturday morning. Sort of going old school. It's our first time all year that we've been on bright and early.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I've already drank like 10 cups of coffee, but I'm ready to go. And
hasn't slept for a week.
You're right, Drew. We haven't had any early morning shows in a long time. We had felt like we had a lot last year, but yes. It's fine. You just set your clocks. You go to get bed a little bit earlier. I went to bed at 2 in the morning as opposed to 5 in the morning, and I'm ready to go.
That's good, Ezzy. We're glad that you're able to make it here, and that's a good responsibility on your part. Richie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Drew.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, no, I like the morning shows, and in reality, we're going to be transitioning to the morning for the playoffs and for the summer. So
that's right.
So an early switch.
That's right. So it'll be early at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and then of course, again 2 o'clock next Saturday against the Calgary Flames. As we enter into tonight's game between the Jets and the Canucks, the Winnipeg Jets are no longer in a playoff spot. As a result of Los Angeles' victory on Thursday night against the Edmonton Oilers. Nice to see the Oilers really show up for that game.
Well, what did you expect?
Yeah, you're right.
We said the matchup's an awful matchup for Edmonton. Not that there are a lot of good matchups, but that's the worst one.
Second half of back-to-back.
Yeah, skilled, small, fast team that tries things against big, solid defensive team that doesn't let you get in the middle. I mean, you're going to try to do things. You're going to turn the puck over. They're going to move up the ice. They're going to cycle on you. I mean, it's an awful matchup. You know, I mean, Edmonton against some other teams who open it up a bit, okay, but not against the Kings.
And Richie, the Kings had lost 2 games going into that. Right. And if the LA Kings don't beat the Edmonton Oilers there, then they seriously damage their chances at getting into the playoffs. But yeah, if you're counting on the Edmonton Oilers to help many teams out, it's probably not going to happen. But as we've said, you never know on a nightly basis what's going to happen in the NHL. The Devils beating the Montreal Canadiens yesterday is a perfect example. It seems to happen every night. But Edmonton is probably the one team, if you look at maybe Buffalo's another team, but Edmonton really is playing with a roster that isn't really an NHL roster. And we already knew that it was going to be an uphill climb for the Winnipeg Jets right now, starting with this afternoon's game. And they can't really count on anybody else at this point. They can only count on themselves winning one game at a time. It's cliche, but really that's what it comes down to. The Jets don't have a lot of room for error. They can't lose a couple games probably here with 5 games to go, Drew. So each game, they have to start it off with a big win today, and they know that. And I think that they're going to win this game. They're fired up. They played so well against Chicago and the Rangers, and Vancouver obviously is going to be a tough matchup. But I think they know that the road ahead, literally going on the road for those 3 games with that back to back, they know it's going to be tough. So I think they're going to be ready today.
It's a busy day on the out of town scoreboard, as you might imagine, given that it's Saturday. The Jets, of course, playing the Canucks. The Kings are in Colorado to face off against an Avalanche team that can be eliminated officially with a loss tonight. So you sort of expect that to happen.
Well, the game goes without saying that the game is important, but you look at the other 2 teams that you're chasing, really, and that being you're playing Vancouver, and then that being really Calgary and Los Angeles, and they play 2 of the worst teams in the National Hockey League.
Yeah. And the Flames are into Edmonton tonight to play against the Oilers.
Now that's a little bit different a matchup. I mean, the Oilers aren't... L.A. against the Oilers is a different matchup than L.A. against Calgary. You have the provincial element, but in reality, you have speed in Calgary, you know, hard work and all that stuff. And Edmonton can skate, and they can make plays. So there's certainly a chance Edmonton can win that game.
Sure.
But Those aren't favorable matchups for the Jets, of course.
And of course, if you're, you know, you're an Oilers fan or you're rooting for the Oilers, you'd hope that they'd show up against their, you know, their in-province rivals, because really that's the most significant game left on their schedule, just strictly based on the rivalry factor.
And in my opinion, if you're hoping for scoreboard help, if you're hoping for teams that are poor squads to help you in the standings, then you've made your own bet.
Sure.
Well, so, too bad. I mean, that's just the way it is. If you're hoping for other teams to help you, then too bad.
And they're not at the point where they need the scoreboard help. They still do control their own destiny, as we've discussed.
I know.
You control, what do you want to say? Control their own playoff lives? Yes. How about that? Sure. Okay, instead of destiny, yeah, I've heard that joke on more than one occasion. But the Jets are still in the position where if you win out, if you win your final five games, you are guaranteed a playoff spot. And that's probably what the focus in that dressing room should be, is forget about the scoreboard, forget about what the other teams around us are doing. We can't rely on anyone else besides ourselves. Let's win, as he said with the cliche, let's win one game at a time, and let's put ourselves into the playoffs based on our own work as opposed to on someone else doing the work for us.
I think 98 points will get them in. I think 4-1 will get them in. And I think they can go 4-1 here. I still think they make the playoffs. I mean, Minnesota, St. Louis, back to back is going to be tough. I think they split that. I'm just giving you my opinion. I think Vancouver they beat at home. Colorado they beat on the road, and I think they'd probably beat Calgary. I think they beat Calgary at home. So I think if they go 4-1 in that fashion, they'll be good to go.
It's my opinion. One of the things I think that they might. I mean, that Minnesota,
Vancouver's not very good.
The Jets are a better team on paper than the Vancouver Canucks are, in my opinion.
Vancouver's not very good. I mean, they've had a good year. Willie Desjardins done a nice job. Probably kind of one of the, you know, dark horse coach of the year candidate, because if you really look at the roster, you know, they had the goaltending injuries, the defensive injuries, you know, kind of like the Jets have had, you know, for a while, playing with none of their top, what, 3-4 guys. Their forwards, after the Sedins, who aren't what they once were, certainly slim, as he. I think it's been a real nice, and I know they're in a weaker division, I think it's been a real nice year in Vancouver, exceeding expectations. But I think you're playing Vancouver Canucks today, you get whatever matchups you want, especially against a team that I think is top heavy. I think this is a game that the Jets are clearly the favorite.
And having said that, Vancouver's beat the Jets twice this year, right? So, I mean, it even though the Winnipeg Jets, I agree, I think the Winnipeg Jets are a better team, not just on paper. I mean, on paper, off paper, whatever. I mean, they're a better team, and they haven't played well. They lost the last game, of course, in Vancouver. But, yeah, you're going to have to go 4-1. Maybe 3-1-1 gets you in. But as you said, I don't think they're looking at the rest of the schedule thinking, maybe 3-1-1 gets us in. As you mentioned, Drew, they got to either win out or win 4 or 5 games. So if they lose one of those back-to-back games against Minnesota or St. Louis, that's all you get, right? That's all you can give, because you want that last game of the season to matter against Calgary. You're hoping that you're in front of Calgary. You're hoping Calgary loses a couple games and you've already got a 1-point lead, and then a win gets you in, right? So they do control whether or not they get into the playoffs. And I think what's going for the Winnipeg Jets right now is that they've played two of the best teams in the league very well. Those were close games. They really could have gone in the Winnipeg Jets' favor. At the very least, they could have gotten a point out of both of those games. But unfortunately, late third period goals really eliminated that opportunity. So I don't think the Jets are limping into these games. I mean, they're healthy. We haven't talked about the Dustin Byfuglien injury.
That's next segment.
But aside,
not injury, suspension.
Aside from that, though, they're healthy. So, I mean, there's no excuses, and Pavlik is playing pretty well. He's cooled off a little bit, but he's playing pretty well. We expect him to get the start unless something different happens at the game day skate.
Won't be a skate. It's with the afternoon game.
You're right. So,
you're right. It's expected that Andre Pavlik will be in net. And, right. I mean, I think one of the things the Jets might have going for them is that game against Minnesota, while it looks important in the standings, it's really not altogether that important for the Minnesota Wild. They're pretty much locked into that first wild card spot, and they're not going to move out of that spot, in my opinion. Sure, technically they could jump up over Chicago, and it's unrealistic. They're 7 points behind Chicago.
No, that's not happening.
Yeah, well, that's not happening. Granted, they have a game in hand, and they're 5 points ahead of Los Angeles and the Jets, so technically they could fall back there. But I think the Minnesota Wild...
Remember, though, Drew, I mean, just to put... And I see that point, and I'm with you on that a little bit.
Sure.
If you look at their schedule, And they do play Chicago, Nashville, and St. Louis each one time. Those are all the three teams they're chasing with a game in hand.
Right.
So, I mean, it's difficult, but I'm sure in that room they're thinking, well, hey, you never know. But I agree that they're
sure
playing.
They're
not playing to get in the playoffs. They're playing for positioning, which is a bit different motivation.
That's right. It's a different motivation that they can, you know. They. I'm not saying they're going to take their foot off the gas because you know, that would be arrogant of me to say.
It might mean that they play a different goalie.
It might mean that you finally see a different goalie other than Devan Dubnyk, especially because you have a back-to-back situation for Minnesota on Monday, Tuesday. They've placed the Jets on Monday. They're home to Detroit today. They play the Jets on Monday, then they travel to Chicago on Tuesday. So, you know, if you're going to play a different goalie, and you would have to think if they can give Devan Dubnyk a day off, they'd like to do it at some point in time.
But you've thought that already about 13 times.
I know. It's amazing. They just, you know, Mike Yeo just keeps trotting out Dubnyk because, you know, why not, I guess? He figures Dubnyk's going and maybe you don't want to mess with a good thing. But, you know, and the St. Louis Blues, they're still in a fight given that they're tied with or they're a point
for sure.
Up.
They all are.
Yeah.
All those top three teams
Those
are
top
fighting.
Three teams are all fighting for that final, you know, to win the Central Division and get to play whomever they want based on the matchups. St. Louis with a victory last night against the Dallas Stars, a 7-5 game.
They were down 5-3, weren't they?
Yeah, I believe they were. It was back to the 1980s yesterday for the St. Louis Blues.
Good
to see them score because they were without Tarasenko in the lineup, of course, and I believe they were without Alex Steen again as well. But you do have to have some concerns about the Blues goaltending, as we've said on the show for a while now, that you have to be concerned if you're giving up five goals and you need seven to win.
And I think there's question marks for most teams, guys, right now. I mean, even if you talk about the teams at the top, so you're talking about Anaheim and whether it's the Rangers or Tampa Bay in the East, there's some question marks there. I think that whether it's injuries or whether it's some concerns on the back end there, there isn't one team that's going in as the favorite, and that's why if the Winnipeg Jets get in, and depending on who they face, it's most likely going to be a pretty open series. I mean, we don't think that there's going... Now, I'm not saying that there won't be a sweep. We saw a sweep last year when Ben Bishop went out and Montreal swept Tampa Bay in the first round. But it's a situation where, for the first time in a while, not that this hasn't been the case for the last 4 or 5 years, but maybe more so than over the last 5 years, if you get in and you're healthy, you have just as good a chance if you're a lower seed versus a high seed that has a few injuries, right? And we've seen Tampa Bay have some injuries on defense as of late, and that's going to hurt them. So, you know, it's an amazing race this year in both conferences. And again, it goes back to kind of the Winnipeg Jets and how they've really shown that this year they're better than many teams that we thought were going to be in there. So you're talking Colorado, Dallas. Mm-hmm. The Winnipeg Jets have shown that their depth is better than those teams, and they're in a position right now, as we've talked about for really the last week or so, that they've got to put together the right amount of wins to get in, whether it's 97 points or 98 points. It's incredible that that's going to be the amount of points that you have to get in, though.
It certainly is a dogfight in the Western Conference. We'll bring all the news to you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the suspension of Dustin Byfuglien, the impact on the Jets' back end. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Ezzy, I must say it was nice to see you wearing that mouthguard when we played pickup hockey on Thursday evening. That was good to see you wearing the mouthguard as you promised you would.
Yeah, we played hockey Thursday night, and it was a good time. Unfortunately, we were opposite you, Drew, in the game, but on the other team, Rick Ralph would not let a puck past him. He only let one goal in, and we couldn't score. I mean, I know it was a pickup game, but Rick was trying pretty hard there.
Oh, he was succeeding at that as well. He played very well in that. You know, didn't know he had that in him. I've never had the opportunity to play with Rick before, but he certainly was lights out. In net for the in the rec league game on Thursday.
Well, he's a good goalie. I mean, we've played with him before, but this was like a Devan Dubnyk like performance. I mean, he was excellent. He was making glove saves. He was coming out to play the puck. I mean, we couldn't get anything by him. It was really incredible. But it was good times nonetheless.
Let's talk about the
doing the splits. It was weird.
Let's talk about the Dustin Byfuglien suspension. 4 games handed down for his cross-check to the neck of JT Miller. Your thoughts on the 4-game suspension? Higher than you thought? Less? Lower than you thought?
You know, a couple games. But I thought he'd get 2. Am I shocked he got 4? I'm not going to say I'm shocked. That was at the upper level of what I thought he would get. I would be shocked if he got 5. I mean, what he did looked pretty awful on video. And I'm not saying he didn't look pretty awful live. I just didn't see it live. So it was a stupid play. And generally speaking, I'm for the strict suspensions in terms of, you know, violent plays against head or hit from behind and things like that. So I don't really have an issue with it. He needs to be accountable for his actions. He chose to do it at an inopportune time. Not that there's ever a good time to do that, but, you know, 4 games left. And certainly we'll talk about the ramifications as it relates to the Jets' back end. But overall, I don't think if you're a fan, you can take a huge issue. You can take the issue with it to a significant extent. And I think the other thing, and we spoke about it on Wednesday before the suspension came down, I think probably there's a little bit of a New York element to this, a big city and a lot of attention. And I don't think it's an anti-Jets thing. I know some of the fans do believe that, and that's fine. They're entitled to their opinion, certainly, and I don't share it. I think the fact that it was happening in New York and the press and the amount of people that come for those games to cover the Rangers and the amount of people that write about it and the influence they have around the league, I think that probably played a little bit of a factor. I think if this happened against Nashville, maybe it was 2 or 3. But it is what it is.
Back in early February, Antoine Roussel cross-checked Adam McQuaid in the face and got 2 games. And to me, that was a lot worse than this.
But the biggest difference with that is that he hit him this time. He hit him when he wasn't looking.
I think that it's still a cross-check to the head. I think whether it's from behind or...
It's a difference, though, right? Like, if I come across you in the head, so. You're not looking. It's different than me cross-checking in the face when I'm looking at you.
I still think, you know, the end result is the same.
Doesn't that speak to the inconsistency in the NHL's, you know, leveling of suspensions?
When you get cross-checked in the face, you at least, you know, you're probably not suspecting it, although Roussel's dirty, as he, but like you would be able to possibly put your hands up. When you're Miller, it's from behind, you have no ability to defend yourself at all.
I still think the end result is the same. It's a cross-check to the head, and I don't think you have the ability to defend yourself. I don't think that Adam McQuaid had the ability to defend himself in that situation. I think it was too much. I think he got too many games. I think we both said on the NHL midweek show that it would be 2 games. Dustin Byfuglien has no prior history, and the NHL Department of Player Safety does factor that in. Whether you think they do or they don't, just watch the videos that they put out, and they'll say, you know, this player has a suspension history. We saw that with Daniel Carcillo on his cross-check on Matthew Perreault. Daniel Carcillo has been suspended and fined before. So not to say that, you know, this wasn't a heinous act, but I was a little bit surprised. I mean, what this does is now the Jets don't have one of their best players for 4 of their last 5 games. So I think that at this time of the year, that's detrimental, and I don't think they factor that in as much. And I know Richie says there might be, you know, some New York element to this. The fact that Alain Vigneault came out after the game and he said this was the most violent and deliberate act. Why wasn't he fined for saying that, by the way? You're not really supposed to criticize whether there's a call or a non-call.
He can lobby, though.
From the officiating.
He's got to protect his players. He can't come out and say anything different. I have no problem with what Vigneault said. I know he was a little over the top, and we'll play Paul Maurice's reaction to the suspension coming up in a couple minutes, and he thought that Vigneault was a little over the top as well. But Vigneault has to go back into his own dressing room at the end of the, you know, each and every day, and, you know, if his players don't think he's got their back, and there's going to be a problem there.
I don't think the players really listen to a lot of the post-game scrums, but back to the suspension. I think that, you know, 4 games is, I mean, Dustin Byfuglien's going to learn a lesson here. I mean, you don't think he wants to be out there this afternoon against the Vancouver Canucks in the next 3 games? I mean, must be killing him, but, you know, he's got to lay in the bed that he made, right?
Yes. Or a bed.
He's not doing media, well, hopefully a bed. He's not doing media till after the suspension, right?
That's correct.
Why? Do we know why?
No. I mean, I guess, is that, maybe it's his prerogative? I'm not sure what the rules are, the NHL's rules are regarding a player when he's suspended from a game, if, you know, his media, like, what his media obligations are.
Don't you just, from like a, I mean, if you're in it, coming into that last game against Calgary, don't you want to get rid of that distraction earlier rather than later?
I don't think it would be a distraction. I think if we're into next Saturday and it's a play-in game and, you know, winner moves on, loser goes home. Well, I mean, I think the Dustin Byfuglien return to the lineup is the, it's a storyline, but it's probably the fifth or the sixth storyline in the course of that game.
I think that the questions on that day, if he'd already talked to the press, would be, you know, how you feel for the game, what are you thinking about, are you cold, are you rusty, whereas if they interview him for the first time, Free Press, Sun Writers, all the different publications, TSN Radio, of course, Ezzie Ginsberg here, and if you interview him for the first time and he hasn't spoken, it's all about the suspension. What do you think you should have got? You have to ask the questions, right?
Have to ask the questions, but I think your focus still is much more on, you know, how important this game is.
I just think you
want to
get rid of that distraction beforehand.
Get it over with.
You have 4 days off. Put him in Friday. Put him out there. Just let him talk for 10 minutes and then get over with.
I don't even think it would be a distraction. So, I mean, yes, you'd like to obviously hear from Dustin Byfuglien, just to hear his side of the story after and his thoughts on, you know, on being suspended for that length of time. But if we come into next Saturday and
I mean, he's going to be coached on what to say. That's fine. That happens to every team and every sport. Just get it over with, in my opinion. That's my opinion. Just get it over with.
I agree with Richie on this one, Drew. I think that to me, it's not even, the issue isn't whether this is a distraction for either him or the team. It's because the fans, the public, they want to hear what he has to say about this issue. And yeah, sure, you might not get maybe the responses that you want because he's going to be careful with how he answers it. But I think we want to hear from him. And really, I think, you know, when an incident like this happens, it's not necessarily that you want an apology. Mm-hmm. You just want to hear his side of it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it takes out the element of, well, did he intentionally injure the player? And again, Drew, I do think this has a bit of shelf life because he's now going to be watching his team play. And I think even though, you know, the focus now becomes how the Jets play against Vancouver and Minnesota and St. Louis, Buff is going to be sitting there watching all of those games. People aren't going to forget that. I mean, people are going to be watching these games knowing that the big man isn't out there.
Look, if they lose the next three games and they fall out of the playoffs and the game next Saturday is for nothing because they've already been eliminated, then that's certainly going to be a topic of conversation. What would the final, you know, five games had looked like, or what would the final four out of five games look like had Dustin Byfuglien been in the lineup? If they're right in it next Saturday and it's a play-in game and it's winner-take-all, the fact that he hasn't been in the lineup, I don't think it's a storyline and it's going to be asked about, but I don't think it's nearly the front-page story that's going to drive the media bus on that day.
No, I look at it differently. I think that I'm looking at this incident in a vacuum. I'm not looking at this as, this incident happened regardless of the playoff race. I mean, if this incident would have happened in October, I think you still need to answer for the incident. I'm not saying, I mean, Dustin Byfuglien has no obligation to speak to the media before he comes back. He has no obligation to speak to the media whenever.
No, he does have an obligation to speak to the media whenever.
He doesn't speak to the media a lot.
No, and which a lot of people would object to. He certainly is. I mean, if you read the NHL's bylaws and guidelines, he's supposed to speak to the media more than he does. Whether or not
I don't know if there's a minimum requirement. I mean, I know the coaches have to speak to the media after the games because we're always in the dressing rooms. But as far as players go, I think it's really up to the individual player. I mean, we've seen Phil Kessel time and time again not want to speak to the media. I don't know if in the CBA it says that each player has to speak a certain amount of times a month. I might be wrong about that, but
in any event, I think it's an issue, or it's a storyline, or, you know, if the Jets fall out, I think if next Saturday, if they're playing for a play-in game next Saturday and it's his return to the lineup, he's asked about it, but it's a one-question thing and it's sort of put to the side very quickly. Not to say that they're right that he's not speaking, but I don't think it's
right,
as big
but
of a story.
That either. Wasn't Richie's point. Obviously, that's going to be the case, Drew, because they have a game to prepare for. How much can you talk about that when the biggest game of the year is on the line? Richie's saying, you address it now. Get it over with. And kind of that window's closed, mm-hmm. Right?
That would be my opinion.
That's fine. That's fair enough. We can agree to disagree. We often do on this program. Let's hear from Pierre LeBrun, his thoughts on the Dustin Byfuglien four-game suspension.
I mean, I think we all agree he's lucky it wasn't more. That was a pretty vicious play. But because there wasn't an injury on the play, that's what saved him, from my understanding, in terms of a source within the league office. So that could have been a much, much longer suspension had there been a serious injury. So that's the good break for Dustin. You know, he doesn't have a history. He's not a dirty player. So I think that helped him as well, that it wasn't longer than four. But all in all, probably caught a break, I'd say.
No, yeah, no pun intended. That's really every suspension. Like, if there's an injury, that there would be more harsh suspension. If McQuaid had, you know, fractured McQuaid's skull with the cross check, then there'd be a bigger suspension. So I don't know if that's any kind of, you know, more in, that's any kind of real, you know, real insight. I know Pierre LeBrun's obviously connected to the people in the hockey world and in the safety department, but I don't think that's any kind of revelation that, that fans would be unaware of. If a player is injured, we talked about it. We talked about it on Wednesday. The ramifications of that are that the suspension is likely more significant, and we knew immediately that JT Miller wasn't injured from it. He finished the game, made the pass on the game winning goal to Chris Kreider through the neutral zone that beat Dustin Byfuglien. So.
I think it just goes back to what we talked about on Wednesday about how this whole thing was blown way out of proportion. It wasn't the most heinous thing you've ever seen on the ice. It wasn't the most heinous thing you're going to see on the ice this season.
Right, because all you do now with Twitter and with it, it's just, and you go to these websites now, all the news websites, they just have videos. And you say, watch them. And
slow it down 14,000 frames per millisecond.
Yeah, go back and have Gordie Howe on video and Mark Messier on video. And those guys... played pretty mean games with those elbows. So
the old butt ended in the face, Richie.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's just take it easy, and everything's the worst thing ever until the next thing's the worst thing ever. Everybody's got to take a step back and calm down.
Here's Paul Maurice on the Dustin Byfuglien suspension.
Well, I know a person. I know the man. The event. It wasn't retaliatory. But at the end of the day, We are responsible for our own actions, and it was a cross check, and it was a dangerous one. So I have no problem with the suspension. I've said that here and before I got here. I have no problem really with any of the suspensions that happen in the league, and that's true of Evander Kane or Adam Lowry's suspension early. And I think people in hockey do. The rub is that we will always disagree on the weight of those suspensions. So. Is it two? Is it four? Is it 10? I have no problem with what the league decides with that. Where I'm going to disagree at times is, you know, which hits worse? You know, is the Roussel hit worse than that? I don't have to make those decisions. It's a tough job. I mean, I've seen two hits from behind in my mind that are worse than the two that our guys got suspended for. But that's my job, right? I'm going to protect my guys and always see them in the best possible life. I mean, Alain Vigneault wanted the electric chair. And I've got a lot more time for Dustin than that, so we will always be a little agitated about what we feel is the unfairness of it. From my point of view, though, I think you can hand out heavier suspensions on all these events. I think the players will make the adjustment. The tough part is being consistent with it, and it is tough. It's not an easy thing to get to. So we take the four games. We did something we shouldn't do. I will move on. Pay the price and move on.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. The best part of doing the early morning shows, of course, is we can go for Bernstein's Deli breakfast right afterwards, which we're going to do.
Etsy has a penchant for driving to Bernstein's, and he lives quite close, so
yes.
Maybe he'll do the old walk today.
Yeah, I'll probably park my car at my house, walk there.
The whole block.
It's not even a block.
Yeah, it's half a block.
Can
you just cut through your neighbor's yards to get there quicker? Do you do that?
Have you made
an arrangement with them?
What I was thinking of doing was building like an underground tunnel to Bernstein's Deli from my house, and maybe like turning it into a water slide or something. And then just kind of going down the water slide to Bernstein's Deli because I'm there so much. So.
And you grease it with actual food grease, and then you'll just slide right through.
Ah, that's good. Like groundskeeper Willie did in The Simpsons.
I'm not as big of a Simpsons fan as you, Drew. So I saw a lot of episodes, but I never got into as much as you.
But I'm sure there are Simpsons fans listening who know the episode where Groundskeeper Willie uses the grease, and you know, he says to Lunch Lady Doris, you know, "Do you have any grease?" And then she says yes, and he rips his shirt off and says, "Then grease me up, woman." It happened. Anyways, let's talk about the Jets.
Drew, let's not talk about your personal life on air.
Let's talk about the Jets and the Canucks. 2 p.m. start time today at MTS Center. A key game, of course, in the battle for the Western Conference playoff race. A key game for the Jets. Less of a key game for the Vancouver Canucks, largely because some of the work that they've done on this road trip that they're currently on. This is the final of the fourth game on their road trip. And they lost on Thursday to the Chicago Blackhawks by 3-1 score, but it's the work they did on Monday and Tuesday, winning back-to-back games in Nashville and I believe in Dallas, if I'm not mistaken, although I will look that up. Yes, in Nashville on Tuesday, pardon me, in St. Louis on Monday, winning back-to-back games there that I think, to my mind, has more or less made them free and clear into the Western Conference playoffs. They're going to probably, barring a significant collapse, finish second in the Pacific Division and have home ice advantage for the first round of the playoffs.
They ended off easy, Drew, but you never know. I mean, we think that 98 points, in my opinion, 98 points for the Jets would get them in. I mean, the Canucks will still have to get a few points there. So it gives them a little bit of a cushion, for sure. But I don't think there's any guarantees here. I know they finish off with Arizona and Edmonton.
Yeah, which is about as close to as...
They finish off with games at home, true. But I just don't think... I think it changes so quickly. One day they lose. And if they lose, obviously the Jets would win. And Calgary and LA win. Are they that home and free?
It's hard to believe. I mean, I'm just saying they're home and free largely based on the schedule. I mean, they have two tough games left. You know, today at Winnipeg, Monday at home to Los Angeles, where you would say that, you know, they would probably say they should win that game. They're playing at home against the team that, you know, on paper they're not better than, but standings-wise they're better than Los Angeles right now. And then you finish with Arizona and Edmonton. I mean, that's as close to finishing with a bye and a bye
as
you can possibly get in the NHL right now.
A combined minus 177 on goal differential.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Those are two bad teams
bad teams.
And you know, it's not something we haven't spoken about all year long, but those are bad teams.
The difference there is that the Oilers, I think as you mentioned it earlier, if you didn't, you mentioned it off air, the Oilers are 5-3-2 in their last 10, and Arizona's 2-8. That's a big difference.
Sure. I mean, the Oilers are, you're right, the Oilers are still, they seem to be playing somewhat hard.
They're playing hard for Todd Nelson. No, they're playing hard.
Well, less so, a bad matchup on Thursday against the Kings.
They're not a good team, Drew, but they're playing a heck of a lot harder than they were for Mr. Akins.
That's right, and a hell of a lot harder than at least the Oilers seem to be okay with winning games. The Coyotes are doing everything in their power to never win another hockey game in the course of the battle for McDavid. You know, never mind what they're doing to the sanctity of the game or whatever, but we'll deal with that issue about tanking on another day in time. But let's talk about today's game. What's the key, you know, some of the keys for the Jets today against the Canucks? You know, from my perspective, jumping out to an early lead here, you know, against the Canucks team, the fourth game in six nights would be important for the Winnipeg Jets.
I thought jumping out to an early deficit would be better.
Jerk.
The biggest thing, Drew, the biggest thing for the Jets to do is to take advantage. Well, first off, is to get the matchup that you want. So you want to get... Trouba hasn't played, to me, a high level of hockey as he was playing before in the last 20 games or so.
I would agree.
It's been kind of a storyline we haven't really touched on to a great extent, but I think we probably will at some point in the weeks to come. So I think what you want to do is you want to make sure that your Enstrom-Myers combination is out against the Sedins. And the reason that you want that is also because you have a skating pair, an offensive pair against the Sedins, and you want to take away space from the Sedins, right? Because the Sedins aren't going to beat you with speed. They're going to play a passing game, a cycle game. You have to be able to move around. You could argue you could be physical against them, but if I'm Paul Maurice, I'm looking at getting Myers and Enstrom. You have last change, so you should be okay with that, right? That's so you want to get the matchups in that sense. In terms of Vancouver, I think Vancouver, you want to play a very physical game against the Canucks. I think that you're able to take advantage of... I mean, think about it. Just look at their lines, guys, and look at the guys that they have. You know, Verbata and Sedin and Burrows and both Sedins and Bonino. You're not talking about big physical guys there, right? So you want to use your size and you want to take advantage of them down low, and you want to make their forwards defend. So I think getting the puck in deep on the forecheck and getting in on that defense and making their defense is good. I think they have a solid defense, but it's getting in on the cycle and making their forwards defend and making them pay the price physically. I think those are two of the keys for this afternoon's game.
And Richie, it was less than 2 weeks ago that in Vancouver, the Winnipeg Jets went in there and they were dominating the Vancouver Canucks, and they had the early 2-0 lead. Mm-hmm. And then Vancouver exploded in the second period with three unanswered goals. And then they added a couple empty netters and ended up winning 5-2. But I agree with Rich in that sense that this Vancouver Canucks team, they have a few guys that like to throw the body around, but not in the same type of numbers that the Winnipeg Jets do. And I think that's what the Jets were doing in Vancouver, and it made them successful. When the Jets, as we know, are playing their type of game, mm-hmm. they give a lot of teams trouble with their speed and their size. And that's with or without Dustin Byfuglien in the mm-hmm. lineup. If you have mm-hmm. Dustin Byfuglien in the lineup, he's leading the charge right up there with Adam Lowry and Blake Wheeler and so on and so forth. They obviously don't have Buff, so Jay Harrison's going to come into the lineup. But, you know, they really are a top-heavy team. And we have Ian McIntyre coming up later on the show of the Vancouver Sun, mm-hmm. and we'll talk to him about that. But the Sedins are playing more to their capability than they were last year under John Tortorella.
Yeah,
they're,
for sure.
They're still not this isn't the Henrik Sedin 110-point type of season where they were really at the top of their game. But they're really where they should be as far as being kind of point-of-game players. And Radim Verbat is the type of player that, you know, as we saw in the game in Vancouver, if you give him some time and space, I mean, the guy's a wizard with the puck. He's a legitimate 30-goal guy. Back in the day, he was a 40-goal guy not too long ago with Arizona. So the Winnipeg Jets can control this game, and it's the type of team that I think if you get out to an early lead and even a couple-goal lead, you can really put this game away early. And you know, the Vancouver Canucks, you know, they've, you know, Bo Horvat, they've got playing on the fourth line there. He's a good rookie, but still,
that,
you know.
That line caused the Jets' problem. It's interesting, in that their speed and size is actually, their speeds and physicality is actually in the bottom two lines.
Yep.
And their top lines are very highly skilled, but not very fast and not very physical.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the Jets actually had trouble with that Horvat line. You know, Hansen can skate.
Yep.
Ronald's Kinnins, I don't know a ton about him. We've seen that one game, but him, Horvat, good player. Obviously, he's going to be a real good player.
Yeah.
And then you look at their other line, and you have like Dorsett and Lyndon Vay can move, and Sean Mathias had a pretty solid year. So he has skill. So you have to watch for those. I thought in the last game that the Jets' top lines, even strength, were controlling the play. The other thing we haven't talked about is, and I know the Canucks' power play has kind of gone up and down, but it's this discipline thing that's really all year has been an issue. A team like the Canucks, I thought last game against Vancouver, they got momentum off the power play. They moved the puck real nice, and they got confidence from that.
The second goal was that power play goal after they controlled the zone. They had the control in the zone pretty much for almost the entire 2 minutes.
But at even strength, the Jets, to me, were the better team in that game. And the importance there is, you know, obviously you never want to take penalties in a game. We know that. But against this team, the Vancouver Canucks, to me, are not a scary team at even strength.
It's 5-on-5, Vancouver's 21st in the NHL on the for and against ratio. The Jets are 11th.
It's a big, I think. So, you know, the Jets, and you look at Vancouver, and I know their power play is 14th in the middle of the pack, but they're better at power play than they are at even strength, if you look, you know, compared to the rest of the league. And you want to make sure you don't give them the confidence. And they have some guys on the back end who can play real solid on the power play, and they move the puck real nice. So keep this game at even strength and make it a skating and physical game on the top two lines and get the matchups. I think the Jets should control this game.
Yeah, Rich, they're 14th. We should mention, though, the Canucks have a power play goal in their last five games. So your point is well taken. I mean, they can – I mean, and again, the power play percentages are so close and, to me, are a little bit overrated. If you look at some of the top power plays in the league, you have Arizona and Carolina in the top 10. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't think that you should look at that. It's kind of like how the power play is doing as of late, because the Winnipeg Jets were 28th back in December, and now they're 12th or 13th, right?
11th in the power play.
There you go.
18.9% success rate on the power play.
So the Jets have, you can say, have almost a top 10 power play in the league right now, but that was really evened out over the last couple months because they weren't very good earlier on in the season. So this Canucks team can hurt you quickly. It's a very skilled team, as Richie mentioned. I think that's even more of a reason why you hope that the Jets get out to an early lead, because then you start to see less of that fourth line of Ronald Kennens and Bo Horvat and Yannick Henson, because you got to think that Willie Desjardins is going to have his top guys out there a lot. And that's kind of, to me, the biggest downfall of the Vancouver Canucks. I know Ryan Miller's out right now. Eddie Lack's a good goalie. His numbers are just as good as Ryan Miller's. Mm-hmm. He was a good goalie when he played for the Manitoba Moose back in the day. And that's obviously one of the reasons why they could kind of move on from the Corey Schneider, Roberto Luongo era. They knew that they had Eddie Lack if they went out and they got out Ryan Miller. So, you know, this team, I think the Jets have been sitting at the MTS Center. Well, not literally sitting at the MTS Center, but they haven't played since Tuesday. And I think they're prepared and they're going to be motivated. Buff's out of the lineup. I think the Jets are going to win big today.
Edler and Tanev are going to be matched up, I'd say, against that Shifley-Wheeler-Stafford line, who probably played, they've been dominant really since put together, but probably played their worst game against the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd expect a little more room out there, less speed, not as good of a team, them to come to play.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Canucks.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show 10 minutes before 9 in the morning. Saturday, the 4th of April. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Chris Gordon. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. You can also buy tickets to the shows that were added for Sean Wayans and Jim Brewer of Saturday Night Live fame coming up in May as well. rumorscomedyclub.com for all of that. Continuing on with our talk about the Jets and the Canucks, 2 p.m. puck drop at MTS Center this afternoon. Game you can hear on TSN 1290. It's also on TSN 3. So Dennis Bayak will be on TV and Paul Edmonds et al. Will be on radio. Dustin Byfuglien. Et al.
Isn't it al?
I don't know. Is it al or et al?
Well, a is and I believe is al it, al is Latin for in company, mm-hmm. not for company and huh?
It could be, it could be very
could
well.
Be et, I mean, it's Latin, is it not?
I don't know. Is it Latin or is it French?
Rich has a law degree. He's familiar with some Latin in the legal system.
Anyways,
all I have is an arts degree. Okay, like I'm not at that level.
Actually, you have 2 degrees. I thought
I have a couple.
And a pre-com degree.
And you're French immersion. You're a well-versed individual.
Yeah,
I spend much of my time at home sipping brandy and reading leather-bound books.
And your beard belies the fact that you're actually well-educated, because that beard is something, all right, I'll tell you. That, all I'm hoping for is when the regular season's over and that thing's coming off your face.
The best part about this beard is that you go out for drinks with Ezzy and like he has a mustache, like a new mustache every time he takes a sip.
Yeah, he gets a beer foam mustache. And unfortunately, you haven't really noticed it on a couple of different occasions.
Unfortunately for who?
Well, unfortunately for us, because it lets us make fun of you about it. That's
it was
for sure.
It was pretty awkward on Thursday night when we were playing hockey, because my beard was like sticking out of, like, I still wear a cage. Like, some guys wear the visor, but I still wear the cage because I want to protect my beautiful, beautiful face.
Actually.
So the beard was actually sticking out, and it was like making it uncomfortable. Like, my helmet barely fit.
Jets and the Canucks, 2 p.m., as we said. You know, Dustin Byfuglien obviously out of the lineup, so Adam Partey and Jay Harrison are going to be your third pairing on the back end. You know, any concerns about Partey and Harrison entering into today's game, having to, you know, Harrison getting back in the lineup? I guess it hasn't been that many games since he last played.
Yeah, I think you have concern, Drew, in the sense that do they get matched up against that real quick line? That Horvat, Hansen, Kennens line, that really they can put some pressure. I thought they caused problems, as I said last segment, against the Jets in that game. And I don't want to overstate the importance of the fourth line in a game like this, because the big boys, you know, we talked about the Jets. The big boys are really what's going to matter. But I have a little bit concerned in terms of the speed of that line, pressuring Partey and Harrison, and creating some opportunities off of the forecheck and off the rush. So yeah, I have some concerns.
Yeah, and you got to think though that they're gonna probably play in the neighborhood of 10 to 12 minutes. Party might play a little bit more. You hope that he doesn't play more on the PK, because as we know, Adam Party is used quite a bit on the PK because of his size, and Paul Maurice is really comfortable with him on the man disadvantage. I really like Jay Harrison. I think Jay Harrison plays such a good veteran defensive defenseman type of role. Like, he rarely makes mistakes. He's smart on the ice. He has good vision on the ice. He's obviously, you know, a little bit towards the end of his career. He's not going to go end to end. That's Adam Party's job.
But with a couple dangles in there.
Yeah, he gets the Party dangle in there. But no, I think, you know, having a veteran of this many games come in, Paul Maurice knows he can go in. I think I'd be a little bit more nervous, for example, no offense to Paul Postma, but I think Paul Postma hasn't played much this year. He's been a scratch, unfortunately, for a lot of the season. So I think you put Jay Harrison in there. But Richie's, you know, talking about, you know, the bottom six for the Vancouver Canucks, but that's what, you know, happened in the game. You know, I keep going back to that game in Vancouver, but, you know, that's kind of what happened. The Canucks were able to get some offense, you know, first and foremost from the Sedins, but they got goals from other players, and you know, the Sedins, you know you mentioned the man advantage, Richie, and the Sedins have done this for years, and they've gotten so many goals on the power play. But not just that, I mean, 5-on-5, I agree with Rich, 5-on-5, this Jets team is better, and I think, you know, the Scheifele Stafford Wheeler line continues to impress. I mean, Stafford's 9-game point streak was finally snapped last game against the New York Rangers, but he's been incredible. He's been almost a point-per-game player since he came over from Buffalo. That line's been excellent, and we know what we're going to get from Ladd Little and Frolik, and I expect that line to really set the pace. I know Gary Lawless wrote about it a couple of days ago in the Free Press about Blake Wheeler. You know, really, this is his time to step up, and guys, Blake Wheeler has done this time and time again. He's stepped up, and I think that, you know, there's no reason to expect that he's not going to have a big game. And now Little's coming back. He's already got a game under his belt. He had a good start, but he kind of faded off, and that's to be expected of a guy just coming back. But I think, you know, this game is going to be won 5-on-5, and I think the Vancouver Canucks, even though they present challenges, I think the Jets will be fine. I know they're going to be motivated to win this one.
You would certainly hope they'd be motivated. I think this comes down to what we spoke on Wednesday's midweek show about how on Tuesday against the Rangers, the Jets' best players, they're, you know, weren't necessarily the best players in the course of that game. Mm-hmm. How important is it to you, Rich, to see the Jets' best players be the best players today?
Because I, you know, as much as we're going to break down the other parts of the game, though, you can throw that all out the window if the Jets' top guys aren't their top guys. Obvious statement, but true. You need your top end guys, your Ladd, Little, Wheeler, all those guys to be, you know, to play at a level commensurate with their pay. Top end guys paid the most money on the team, go take advantage of that. I mean, prove your worth. This is the time to shine. All you've been saying is you want to play meaningful games in March and April. You have the opportunity now, so take advantage of it.
How much of an impact, obviously Dustin Byfuglien being out of the lineup hurts, and nobody was going to make the argument that they're better off without Buff.
He's a great player. Is there any spot in the roster where they have the depth to be able to handle it? It's the right side defense.
Sure. Would you be surprised to see Myers and Trouba play almost, I mean, sort of
based on the way
Trouba
has been playing, I don't think he'll be him. I think Myers probably get 27 to 28 minutes of ice time today, depending obviously on the penalty situation, and I have to see Trouba probably be around the 21 to 22, maybe 23 spot probably.
And that's not anything that we really haven't seen. Tyler Myers was playing 24 minutes a game with Buffalo, Richie, and he's continued to play 24, 25,
easier
26.
Minutes, though, as he.
Yeah.
Easier
no,
minutes.
But it's just as far as the minutes themselves, right? He's used to that. And yeah, that'll probably go up a little bit. But we saw when Dustin Byfuglien and Brian Little were out of the lineup, the Jets won 5 games in a row. So, I mean, it's not to be expected that they can't pick up the slack and be fine without Dustin Byfuglien in the lineup.
Well, they seem almost buys in more when they have injuries. It's kind of like any team does. They buy in more to what the coach is saying.
Well, it's almost
the gaps and all that stuff.
You sort of get, you sort of become more focused when there's a little bit of adversity staring you in the face. And I mean, you know, every team in the NHL, I mean, there's very few teams in the NHL that go 82 games without facing some adversity, whether it's injuries, whether it's suspensions, whatever it might be. Jets are no different, and they've certainly played with their fair share of injuries and adversity all season long. And so there's no reason to believe that with Byfuglien out of the lineup, you know, the 4-game suspension, the Jets can't respond in kind. And you said, Richie, you know, their best depth area is on the right side of the defense, so it's, you know, you're not losing one of your top centers like you did when Little was out of the lineup. Your forward group, you know, 1 through 12 is as deep as it's been since they've been back here in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no reason why against the Vancouver Canucks today it shouldn't be anything other than a top-notch effort with hopefully an accompanying result.
If you're a fan of the team, absolutely.
If you're a fan of the team, absolutely, of course. And I mean, Ezzie, go ahead.
I think where it hurts you a little bit more, because, you know, we talk about the right side, but this team, I mean, they can, we go back to when they had their top four defensemen out in December, end of November, early December, and they were able to pick up the slack. Obviously, that was when Ben Chiarot was still there. But I think without Dustin Byfuglien in the lineup, you almost lose that game breaker. And the Jets have other game breakers, but to me, that's where they miss them more. I mean, you're talking about Byfuglien scoring two goals against mm-hmm. the Chicago Blackhawks, mm-hmm. coming back in after the injury, a couple games after the injury. And so to me, that's probably where you miss him more, because he has the impact on both sides of the ice. They're going to miss him. But this, to me, is almost, as Richie said, I think this is going to be even more of a motivation, knowing that one of their leaders is out of the lineup and they have to now go on a run of winning four of their last five games, or hopefully all five games, with Buff out for four of them.
Of the four games that he's going to be suspended for, this is the best matchup and where they'll miss him least, because Vancouver probably has the worst second line out of the next four teams they play. And that's going to be the biggest thing. There's less of a matchup issue. When you get into Minnesota and St. Louis and Colorado, even though without McKinnon, you're looking at teams where you're going to have Trouba and Stewart, to me, haven't been as effective. And then you're looking at, well, the alternative is Party and Harrison, so you're going to have to play them against whoever you want to play. You don't have the Byfuglien option. So I think today's game is where you're going to see him miss the least of the four.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll be joined by the University of North Dakota assistant head coach, Brad Berry. We'll talk about the Fighting Sioux as they get set for the Frozen Four coming up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's a former Winnipeg Jets player himself. He's currently the University of North Dakota assistant coach. Brad Berry, good morning and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning. Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Brad?
Doing very well.
Excellent. Glad to hear that. Obviously, Frozen Four starts this coming Thursday, the 9th of April, and you guys start off your first game in the Frozen Four against Boston University on Thursday night. What's the biggest challenge that Boston University presents to the University of North Dakota?
Well, I think first and foremost, obviously from top to bottom, they got a very good team that showed all year as far as the wins they piled up. But I think the thing that jumps out at you right away is, what everybody's talking about is Jack Eichel and, the high draft pick this year and the line that he plays on. He leads a group of forwards that are pretty offensive and that are very challenging to contain. So I think that's probably the biggest thing on their team. They have very good decor and their goaltender's been outstanding. But I would say their forward group is probably the strength of their team.
Brad, you mentioned Jack Eichel, who's projected to go number two. You never know, he might go number one, but Connor McDavid's pretty good. But
yep.
from your time in watching Jack Eichel play, what have you seen in his game this season, and what do you think his ceiling is as an NHLer?
Well, he's got top-end skill, and we pre-scouted. We don't play them a lot during the year. Actually, we don't play them at all. But we had four or five games of pre-scout while watching him, and he's a very elusive player, and he's sneaky strong, and he looks like he's big and tall. That might lack some strength, but he is a very strong player. And when he gets in the offensive zone, he eludes defenders if they're not ready. And he's a great first pass player. Obviously, he can score at will, but he's a great puck mover and he finds open guys all the time. So that's one player if you give time and space. And that's what a lot of top end NHLers are. If you give them time and space, they can make plays, and that's what he can do.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is University of North Dakota assistant coach Brad Berry, discussing the Frozen Four, which starts on Thursday evening.
Brad, along with Jack Eichel, UND goaltender Zane McIntyre is a finalist for the Hobie Baker Award, and he's obviously had an excellent season for UND this year. His numbers are really astonishing, 29-9-3 during the regular season, 200 goals against average, and he had a .931 save percentage. Why has McIntyre been so good for you guys this year?
I just think the process or the preparation and the process he goes through on a day-to-day basis, you know, the maturity that he's gotten to from his first year here to now his third year, that, you know, he acts like a pro. He's the first one at the rink. He's the last one to leave. And in between, the preparation that he does, whether it's in the weight room, whether it's on the ice, or whether it's a mental part of it, he's all in. And it just kind of permeates through our team. And, you know, the one thing, the feeling that goes in the locker room, that, you know, when he's in such a zone and he's prepared, it gives our guys a good feeling, and you have a chance to win every night. So, you know, this time of year, and the four teams that are going to the Frozen Four, every one of them has an excellent goaltender, and that's not by coincidence.
You know, Brad, you look at this team, and people might know some draft picks or guys that they've, you know, names that they recognize. The Schmaltz brothers are two you know, names that players that fans might recognize. Excuse me, Jordan, drafted by St. Louis, and then Nick, recently drafted by Chicago. What's it like having those two players on the squad playing, you know, together? Of course, I'm sure their family is quite excited about it. And how have they performed over the course of the season?
Well, you know what? It's been interesting. Like, I've been back here 3 years now, and it was Jordan, the defenseman, Jordan Schmaltz's first year here. And he kind of reminds me of Nick, the freshman forward that we have, his brother here. That when they first come in, there's you know, a few holes in their game. Top-end offensive ability, top-end playmaking ability. But it's about trying to polish the rough edges. And again, like I said, by no means they're deficient as total hockey players. But it's a process when you go from the junior ranks and now you're playing college hockey against players that are maybe 22, 23, 24 years old, and you're 17, 18 years old. That's a big age difference, and things get magnified. So Jordan Schmaltz has done a great job as far as going from his first year to his third year, and his game is really at a top-end position right now. With Nick, he's had a really good freshman year. He's racked up a lot of points, but you can see the progression that he's going to get after two or three years here, and hopefully it'll prepare him well for the next level.
Brad, from a personal perspective, you know, you coach in the NHL and then the AHL, and now you're back at UND. What's the biggest adjustment for you coaching professionally versus coaching in college ranks?
The biggest challenge, you know what? Actually, it's a little bit of different dynamic, just because, you know, my job right now, you know, is coaching and also recruiting for the next wave of players coming through our program.
Right.
So, the one thing that you have in college is that you are, you know, first and foremost, hands-on as far as what the players or who the players that are going to be coming into your program. And then from there, when they come in your program, you get to develop them. Whereas when you coach pro hockey, your job is solely coaching. You know, your responsibility isn't bringing the players in. When you get them, you develop them, and you know, work with them from there. So I think at the college level, it's more of a 50-50. Process versus the, you know, the 100% coaching at the pro level.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're discussing the Frozen Four in the University of North Dakota with this UND assistant coach Brad Berry. The North Dakota's in action Thursday night. They play Boston University. The tournament takes place actually in Boston as well this year.
Brad, we've talked about Tucker Poolman quite a bit on this show, not just because he has a great name, but because he's playing very well for UND this year. Tim Campbell of the Free Press wrote an article about him a couple of months ago. He was a 2013 fifth rounder, and I know you work with the defenseman quite a bit, even though he's played a little bit forward, I've been told. How have you seen his game grow in his first year of college hockey?
Tremendous. Probably more than we thought, you know, where his development lies right now. You know, and in saying that, you know, when we recruited him, you know, he was what you would call the ultimate late bloomer, where, you know, he wasn't sought after his high school years, and then even trying to make junior teams. Yet, you know, he went to two or three teams before he made his first junior team, and then played 3 years of junior. So, you know, from where he was to where he is now, you know, to the credit of his own, you know, mental focus, he's turned into a pretty good player. And you know, right now, he's a key part of our team. You know, he's bouncing back between forward and defense. Not too many guys can do that as you go up in levels in hockey. But what it says about him is he's a very, very smart player. If you tell him once to do something, he gets it right away. His body composition, like he's just a total athlete. Like he's 6'3", almost 6'4", and he's quick, he's fast, and he tracks pucks. He's very good defensively, and he's got a great shot. Like he leads our team in power play goals this year, and he plays on the back end on the power play and just bomb shots. So he's got a lot of physical tools, and he's got a great future ahead of him.
Brad, you mentioned that part of your role with the UND is to be a recruiter, and year after year, the University of North Dakota seems to be a perennial national title contender in college hockey. You know, how much easier does that tradition of winning, the tradition that comes with being playing for UND, make your job as a recruiter?
You know what? It's huge, the part of winning, and like, for example, getting to the Frozen Four. This is the second year in a row we've been there, and I think it's probably 9 out of the last 11 years or whatever. It's huge as far as the visibility and the recognition, and, you know, kids want to be part of a winning culture, a winning tradition. And, you know, like I said, you know, we live in Grand Forks, North Dakota, just south of you, and, you know, it's a great community, great family community. It's not a big metro area. So what do? You go to school and you try to develop to be a hockey player. Two things that mainly that you do here. And, you know, that's part of our recruiting tool is, you know, if you want to be a hockey player, you want to get a great education, those are the two things you want to do. Come here and, you know, you can tell the players that come through here, you know, like the Jonathan Taves, the Zach Parises, the Travis Ajax, you know, they chose to do that. And we're grateful for that.
And Brad, you know, back from a personal perspective, of course, you have the ties you have to the Winnipeg area and playing for the Jets and coaching in Winnipeg with the Moose, and now, of course, being back at UND. You played there from 83 to 86 and played for Gino Gasparini, who is, you know, is a close kind of a mentor for Dave Haxtell. How does that all come together for you?
Well, you know what, we've all, you know, Gino was kind of like the godfather of UND hockey here, and, you know, he came in the program, he played for the program, and then he got the program back on its rails again when he started coaching here in the late 70s. You know, we've all played for him. You know, we've all learned from him. And, you know, he's probably the biggest mentor for all of us. And, you know, the one thing that he kind of translated to us as players and coaches is there's no one person bigger than the program. Mm-hmm. And that leads into our culture here that, you know what, it's all about the program. It isn't about one person or two people. It's about what can you do for the program? And, you know, like I said, that just keeps passing on from generation to generation.
Brad, we'll let you go on this next question, and obviously not to look past Boston University because it's going to be a tremendous game coming up on Thursday. But the winner of North Dakota against Boston University plays either the winner of Omaha and Providence. Both those teams entered the Frozen Four unranked coming out of each of their quadrants, though. You know, which of those teams do you think that North Dakota would match up better against, or is it just a function you're not looking ahead past Boston University just yet?
I'm going to take that last approach to your question, not look past the first game here. You know, like I said before, like each team has their strengths going into the tournament. They're very good teams. They're very qualified teams. They earn that right to go to the Frozen Four. But like I said before, each one of those teams that you mentioned has an excellent goaltender that's had a strong year, and they have a good team around them. So like I said, you got four capable teams that are going to the Frozen Four that can win it. And like I said, we'd like to be there playing the last game on the last day and winning that game.
Well, Brad, you can rest assured that we'll be cheering for UND.
Absolutely.
Because Richie is a graduate of UND, so you know that we'll be pulling for you guys.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys, and good luck today against the Canucks, and we'll be pulling for you guys too, here.
Thanks very much. That's Brad Berry. He's the assistant coach of the University of North Dakota. The game will be on TSN2 on Thursday, so you can watch them playing against Boston College in the Frozen Four. Great hockey, of course. Brad, appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to UND assistant coach Brad Berry for joining us to talk about North Dakota ahead of the Frozen Four coming up starting Thursday in Boston. Games available on TSN2. It's great hockey. Richie, you were just saying that you were watching a game earlier this week.
Yes, I was. I always mix up Boston University and Boston College against Denver. And great pace to the game, a lot of chances. I was watching on ESPN down south, and it's great hockey, and they open it up a bit sometimes, and
especially in these games when, you know, it's one-offs, right?
So yeah.
The quality is great. I absolutely encourage people to check it out.
Yeah, Rich, you and I have gone down to a bunch of UND games, yeah. Of course, when you were down at school there. But, yeah, if you live in Winnipeg or anywhere really in Manitoba, we're so close to Grand Forks there. It's, what, an hour and a half drive or something like that. But they usually play.
If you're driving.
Yeah, if you're driving there in an hour and a half, I'm staying off the highway.
Yeah, 2 hours, let's call it.
Yeah.
But you go down there.
And, three when you try and cross the border with
yeah, them. Yeah, and they usually play weekend sets, right, in yes. college hockey
because yeah.
they play less games.
Friday,
but,
Saturday.
You know, so they'll play teams like St. Cloud State and Denver and Colorado College, stuff like that. But it's a good time. Grand Forks is an awesome town. Of course, our boy KK lives down there. But it's great hockey. The college game just continues to get better and better. And, you know, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen so many college players signed by various teams, Chicago and, you know, obviously Andrew Kopp signed with the Jets. But it really is good hockey. It's a great atmosphere, too. So you should go check it out if you can.
And the thing is that so many of the players in the Jets were college sure. players. That's the thing. I mean, so you're seeing these guys before they get up there. But, you know, Blake Wheeler's at Minnesota and Mark Stewart's at Colorado College and
Trouba at Michigan.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, plenty of college representation on the Winnipeg Jets. I want to make note, of course, the Women's World Hockey Championships, the gold medal game going on right now.
Who's in the gold medal game in that one?
It's Canada and the U.S., believe it or not.
Wow.
Shocking, I know. It never happens that way.
Holy smokes.
So Canada and the U.S. playing right now. The game is available on your TSN 3 right now. U.S. up 1-0 on Canada 5 minutes into that game. It's, you know, it's a foregone conclusion that those two teams will play in the finals, but the final game is usually pretty entertaining.
Yes, that's true.
As there's certainly no love loss between the Canadian women and the American women.
Turn that game on. The women need your support, so this game is always close, and it's always entertaining.
Yeah, exactly right.
Where's the game's overseas this year, right?
Yeah, Finland, maybe? I'm not 100%
sure. Best is when you
sure.
see, like, only, you know, it's the big deal here in Canada, right? So all the ads on the Finnish boards are all Canadian companies.
That's true. It's it's a little interesting, but yeah, it's somewhere overseas. I'm not 100% sure where it is this year. Talk about the Jets season. Obviously, we're into the final week of the regular season now with 5 games to go, and the playoffs are tantalizingly close for the Winnipeg Jets, as close as they've ever been since they've returned here to Winnipeg. If they were to fall short, if they get 2-0 U.S. right now, they just scored. If the Jets get right up to game 82 and fall just short, either, you know, they lose to Calgary or maybe they haven't done sure. enough this week. Is the season a disappointment in your mind?
Okay, well, I think the season's a disappointment if they don't make the playoffs based upon the fact they've essentially been in a playoff spot for the past 2 to 3 months. Does it mean that the organization is not progressing? No. So I think if you look at it that way, I do think there are some ramifications, possible ramifications, I should say, in terms of if they don't make the playoffs and how many free agents they have and how appealing the organization looks to the outside player. Because with this free agents, you're going to have to fill those spots. You know, Stafford and Frolik and Tulusi and Slater, a ton of guys are, you know, coming up for UFA. Not the most significant guys in your roster by any means, but guys who are complementary players. So I think that will have a, you know, there's a perception factor there. But overall, I think it would be a disappointment, Drew, for sure, that they don't, if they don't make the playoffs because of the fact that they were really in the driver's seat for the large part of the last 2 to 3 months. But their young players have had success, I think, and guys like Mark Scheifele, all the Trouba seems to have regressed the past 20 to 25 games, really since Bogosian was traded. But, you know, the young guys, obviously in the system, you guys like Ehlers, you have guys like that coming, and Hutchinson, notwithstanding the fact he struggled in the second half, had a nice first half of the year, and guys like Blake Wheeler, you know, continued to become leaders and all that. So I think you've overall had pretty good success, but that would be disappointment because as the 16 teams make the playoffs, and we talk about, you know, this playoff race, but I mean, more than half the league makes the playoffs. This will be the fourth year in a row that you haven't made it. I mean, of course you're going to be good in year 5-6 because you're drafting high every year. So, I mean, that's one thing you have to take into account.
Yeah, Richie, and my answer to the question is going to be very similar to your answer. I think at the beginning of this season, I didn't predict that the Jets would make the playoffs, and that's because I thought teams like Colorado and Dallas and San Jose would be there. And the Jets have really taken the next step, and teams like those three have taken a step back. I should say the Jets took a step forward. And so that's why I didn't think that the Jets would be completely out of the playoff race, but I thought they'd probably fall short, honestly, 5 or 6 points.
Quickly, those teams are interesting because San Jose, I think, is taking that step back for good. But Colorado and Dallas, I don't think are taking a step back.
Well, look
for
at
good.
The way those teams have played in the last month or so, right? Mm-hmm. Or even 2 months when you're talking about Dallas, and they've had injuries, the Sagan injury, Nichushkin. So, but no, I think if the Jets miss the playoffs, that's a disappointment because every year, every team wants to make the playoffs, right? And as Richie said, the Jets have been at a playoff spot basically since November or early December. So it's a disappointment. But I agree with you, Rich, in that this organization has taken steps forward, either whether you want to look at goaltending or you want to look at some of the performances by players like Mark Scheifele and Adam Lowry. And again, one of the primary reasons I should say that I didn't think they'd get in is because I didn't think that the goaltending and the offense would be there. I knew that the Jets' strength is obviously defense. And Jacob Trouba, I mean, we've talked about it all year, even though he's had a little bit of a struggle here, on many nights he's their best defenseman. And the trade that saw Kane and Zach Bogosian go to Buffalo has really made this team better. Regardless of Drew Stafford signs, I think they're going to try to sign him. But Tyler Myers, to me, has just made this defense even better. So and Dustin Byfuglien is one of the players that I think that we thought was going to be forward, and he's been excellent as a defenseman, and he's on many nights been their best player. So, you know, in a roundabout way, what I'm trying to say is the Jets are obviously going to look at the season. If they don't get in, it's not going to be what they envision. But regardless of that, I think we've seen the team show that they can compete with the big boys in the Western Conference. They can compete with the big boys in their own division, whether it's Chicago, whether it's St. Louis, and really the league as a whole, Richie. I mean, the Jets this year,
everybody, because everybody's not very good, right? Like, that's part of it too. As I think that's part of it. I think we talk about the step back by Dallas and Colorado. I think for a short-term step back. That plays into it for me because this year, as we talked about, anybody's got a shot.
Yep.
You want to get in. Who knows what happens after this season? You know, it doesn't mean they're not going to continue to get better, but those teams might take a step. They might acquire a defenseman or two, a whole year of having a better defense in Dallas. You know, a couple of other teams rework their rosters, and you're fighting for a playoff spot next year. Who knows? So it's that. I think it's this year is their opportunity because teams are, to me, very average that will hurt you. And the fact that the Jets have been playing really well and been in those games, that if they can get in there, who knows what can happen.
Both of you have mentioned on you know, a couple occasions on the show so far about Jacob Trouba and his performance as of late. And, you know, sort of struggling in the last 20 to 25 games, or maybe not playing up to the standard that he set himself up for.
There's no question about that.
Okay, well, then let's discuss that. Why do you think he's been struggling? What have you been seeing in his game?
You guys know I've been a big proponent of his game. He's been a tremendously mature and polished defensive player. His offensive game is solid. I don't think it's dynamic. I think it's solid. He's had a lot of problem with four opposing forecheckers getting in and taking away his time and space, in which he used to not panic, and he seems to be panicking and making poor decisions. He can skate his way out of those things. For whatever reason, he's having trouble with maybe making the... I thought last game or two he's made some better quick decisions, but he's had his biggest problem has been trouble with the forecheck, and which is rare because before he didn't seem to be fazed by that at all. So that is a bit concerning. Nothing that can't be corrected, but his game has certainly regressed over the past quarter of the season.
Yeah, and most notably the offensive game. But, you know, to me,
those are intertwined, though, Ezzy. Mm-hmm. If you can't make the quick plays and the decisions, then you're gonna hurt your offensive game.
Yeah, it hurts your confidence and all of that. And some of that has to do with Jacob Trouba not getting, you know, number one power play minutes, and he hasn't in his first 2 years in the NHL. But I have no problems at all, you know, with Jacob Trouba this season heading into the last five games. I think maybe part of it has to do with, you know, on certain nights they ask him to play 23, 24, 25 minutes a game. Against Florida, I remember on the road, he played 29 minutes, and that partly to do with Buff was out. But Jacob Trouba's skating ability, the way he sees the game, is elite. And I think, you know, you're going to have these bumps. To me, if he has 21 points versus 31 or 41 points, to me, doesn't bother me that much.
I'm not worried about the points. I'm worried about the defensive decision-making and the quick decisions in his own zone. That's where the problems, have arisen.
Yeah, I agree. There's the defensive component, or not defensive component, just the defensive side of his game was maybe stronger at the early part of the season,
Playing with Mark Stewart, as it's tough, too, because he carries the load there.
So you think it's some of it is a function of wearing down, maybe having to carry a teammate with him?
Might. I mean, I guess it's his first full season, right? Because he had the injury, the neck injury last year for a period of time. I'm not sure his game's played, but I'm not so the whole season thing a little bit might be a factor, but it's more so I think, you know, the top minutes he plays and playing with Mark Stewart, who plays a physical game but takes chances in the neutral zone at times to be physical and isn't the best skater and isn't the best offensive player. You know, he's the better of the two. Now, don't get me wrong. Mark Stewart, as a veteran, has certainly helped him as well. It's not, you know, there's a mutually beneficial relationship. I don't think the benefits necessarily, you know, they both benefit in different ways, is what I should say. You know, the mentorship and the different things and the playing tough and all that that Mark Stewart brings to the table and the leadership, I think, are significant in Jacob Trouba's overall development. But in terms of actual play on the ice, Jacob Trouba helps Mark Stewart a lot more.
And I think Jacob Trouba, you know, we talked about, you know, the offensive side of his game, and more so it's the defensive side of his game that maybe he's been struggling with. But for me, you know, sometimes when you don't see him on the scoreboard, that's probably a good thing. But no, I think when Jacob Trouba's playing his best, he's playing physically, and, you know, he is also trying to jump up into the rush. And, you know, the Jets are going to need that here down the stretch. You know, with Buff out, and Tobias Enstrom hasn't exactly been lighting it up this year with four goals, I think they're going to need Jacob Trouba. And we've seen Tyler Myers. I mean, he's been excellent since coming over to play for the Jets, 13 points in 20 games. I think they're going to need Jacob Trouba to step up. And I think Richie's right. I think when the defensive side of his game is struggling, maybe he doesn't take as many chances, both with, you know, a body check or jumping up into the rush and try to go end-to-end. The guy's an excellent skater. I mean, Jacob Trouba is not only the number one defenseman right now, he's the number one defenseman for 15 years to come. I mean, he really is that good.
He has not played like a number one defenseman for the past 25, 30 games. Enstrom and Myers have been that pairing, right?
Yep.
But I agree with you in terms of the talent overall, especially defensively. That's the big thing, locked down more than anyone. The Jets' system, though, is based upon these defensemen being aggressive and skating a lot and taking away space. You hear about gap and all the cliche terms. In reality, that's the defenseman pinching down the boards, the defenseman taking away space, and the forwards backing them up. Speed is a big element of that, and they need him to be at his top level.
Let's head to break. When we come back, the Vancouver Suns' Ian McIntyre will join us for more discussion about this afternoon's Jets-Canucks game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.